I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Let's go!
ESPN 97.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gal Media station.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
And just in case y'all not going to decide to do the right thing, if y'all got a crew, you got to have a fall guy in the crew.
That's the voice of former NFL wide receiver Chris Carter. The laugh you heard is from former NFL defensive tackle Warren Sapp. Not exactly the best guys historically when it comes to off the field in NFL history. But hey, I am playing Chris Carter talking about a fall guy because this is something that we're going to be doing going forward with the Houston Astros. When Joe returns, Joe's out today, be back on Monday, we are going to introduce a new segment for when the Astros falter called Fall Guy. Now, yesterday, the offense is the fall guy for the Astros. Yeah, it wasn't Ronel Blanco's best start, but, I mean, the Cardinals scored 4 runs. And the guy on the hill for St. Louis, with his mustache, Miles Moustakas, or whatever the hell his name is, not worth remembering, no offense. His mustache is worthy of remembering. So I'll just call him Miles the Mustache. That guy's got a 5.5 ERA, and you got 5 hits on him. You know, we didn't even have a runners in scoring position crisis because that didn't really happen that much. We didn't really have a left on base issue either. The Astros just didn't get hits. Yiner Diaz hit a home run, his third straight game with a home run, and Trey Cabbage hit a home run as well. But I think that after a 3-3 home stand where it felt like the Astros finally had an opportunity to do something they've only done once this year, get a sweep, they don't pull it off. I think a lot of Astros fans are back in that bad vibes mode and are perhaps looking for a pound of flesh sooner rather than later. And in a way, yesterday has offered some. First, it was Jose Abreu. Jose Abreu's now back. It seems like even if he was the fall guy for the early season struggles, he's still going to be getting opportunities to play. So the other nominees are, I think, obviously the hitting coaches because, look, they have one of the best averages in baseball. They are up there in a lot of offensive categories. But, I mean, why are things not good when this team has runners in scoring position? Why can't they put runs across the plate? Why can they get on base but not score? Is it the lineup order, as Jeremy Booth, when he's joined us, is opined? Is it something else? So Alex Cintron and Troy Snicker are, at the very least, I think, guys to have in the back of your mind. Maybe the Astros move on from them the same way that the Seattle Mariners moved on from their offensive coordinator, which apparently is a real position in baseball. Maybe that's something that happens as the season progresses. But I think right now you should be looking at the training staff. If you've listened to me here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 long enough, you've known that I've always found myself baffled and confused by the way that the Astros communicate injuries to us because they're generally all over the place. And I don't know if you fault the training staff for a larger baseball issue with four pitchers requiring elbow surgeries over the last 13 months. Christian Javier, Jose Urquidy, Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers. Because I guess the USA Today reported that 35.7% of pitchers on major league rosters at the end of last year had undergone Tommy John surgery at some point in their careers. That is insane. That is over a third of pitchers in baseball. There were 275 pitchers at the major league level who had had Tommy John surgery at some point in their career. In 2016, there were 190. So again, that's an increase of, what, close to 50%?
Yeah, it's almost 100 more.
Yeah.
In 8 years.
That it's insane. It's that is an issue across baseball. I don't think that's something you can blame the Astros for. But the way the Astros talk about injuries does make you wonder about their training staff as a whole. I mean, here's Dana Brown, who is not a doctor, talking for the Astros training staff about Christian Javier after the announcement that Javier was getting elbow surgery. Because remember, he had a neck issue. And Brown wasn't concerned about the diminishing velocity 10 days ago. And now he has this to say. Javier's velocity has been fluctuating up and down throughout the course of the year. And when we signed him long-term, he was fine, so we know that something must be going on. And so we got him checked out. I think they're separate issues. But ultimately, we're glad that we found out what was wrong, and hopefully we'll get him back next year around July. We're glad we found out what was wrong, is what Dana Brown said. Does anyone believe him when he says that? How could you? I don't. And then, as highlighted by Chandler Rome in his piece in The Athletic, four thoughts on the season-ending injuries for Christian Javier and Jose Urquidy, Houston's return to play procedure is back under scrutiny. He starts off talking about Christian Javier. Javier, who had spent 18 days on the injured list with neck discomfort, returns. The velocity's down. He goes back on the injured list with right forearm discomfort, and then he's getting elbow surgery. You heard Dana say just a second ago when I read that quote out that these two instances were separate injuries, but I mean, do you believe that? I'll be honest, I'm just not going to believe anything that they say. And I feel like one way that any of us, Sean, might start trusting the Astros when they talk about injuries is if they make some sort of public statement, press release, about moving to a different training team,
yeah,
medical team.
Yeah, I mean, even like what Chandler is saying with the return to play thing, even if it was a neck issue, it's like it's not crazy to think that trying to maximize velocity at all costs and you come back from a neck issue and maybe you're not all the way back and your velocity's dipping, and to get some more out of it, you're tweaking how you're throwing a baseball, and then that can lead to stress on your elbow.
Yep.
Like it could all be connected to where the neck injury originally is what, and having to compensate for that,
yeah,
is what leads to the elbow.
So this isn't the only elbow that potentially, Sean, that they perhaps didn't know what they were doing with. Because the other question you got to ask, okay, Jose Urquidy also had forearm issues and he's back out there. Did they rush him back? Another question. Remember when JP France was dealing with some issues? Dana Brown said on May 26th that France may have been rushed back from a shoulder injury. Hey, remember when Jake Myers had a shoulder injury and they brought him back? I mean, that was talked about, and this is multiple times now where the Astros' best case scenario have bad luck, worst case scenario, are operating like the training staff in the movie Any Given Sunday, where they're just sending guys back out there. And we're not talking about football here. We're talking about baseball. And look, I get it. Team doctors, they're always going to be biased for the best interests of the team, which are to get these guys back out there as quickly as possible. But clearly today, just based off of the data we just gave you, we're talking about over a third of baseball having had to have Tommy John surgery. A third of all pitchers have undergone it, which is insane. So if that's happening across the sport, shouldn't you be as cautious as possible? Don't you kind of understand maybe why Lance McCullers has taken as much time to come back from all of his injuries? It makes me understand it a little bit more. I get the frustration, but when that data is in front of you, you think to yourself, you know what? Maybe Lance should come back to the beat of his own drum instead of, I don't know, being put back out there, given that especially the sample size that you have this year is that you got two guys where you can make a strong case. They were put back out too quickly. And another guy in JP France with the same situation, except for not elbow here we're talking about. We're talking shoulder. But that's three pitchers. That's three starting pitchers for you on a team that is supposed to have the most depth in pitching in all of baseball. You can definitely make the argument that the training staff or medical staff effed this up three times in 1 year. Is there going to be any accountability for them? So if there should be a pound of flesh or a fall guy for the Astros right now, I think it's the training staff, the medical staff, whoever the hell's there. Someone has to learn here, okay? Forget the fact that the Astros can't hit for whatever reason, can't score runs, that they've been a 500 baseball team for the last calendar year. If you're giving these guys big-time contracts and you have a payroll that's top three in baseball, and guys just keep on getting hurt, and then when they come back, they re-aggravate the injury. I don't know. Maybe you should take care of your products a little bit better. Maybe you should change insurance companies, if you will.
Yeah, they're like the fact that they seem like they're rushing guys back, or at least that's the like that's one of the things that is eyebrow raising, is that these guys come back and then they get hurt again, or they come back and in a rehab start get hurt. Where, like you mentioned which football movie? Any Given Sunday is what the movie you mentioned. I mean, it's any football movie, really. You have the team doctor rushing guys back, being like, "All right, are you sure? Are you sure?" Or holding the fingers next to it. How many fingers are you saying? The thing is, though, with these injuries, you can't really like tough it out if you're going to be a pitcher and your arm hurts. Like, it's not like being a middle linebacker and maybe your knee is gimpy, but you can still run on it. Or maybe you're having, a pec issue and you're Ray Lewis and can come back very fast from a pec issue. A season-ending injury doesn't end your season if you're Ray Lewis. But if you're Christian Javier, it's like, no, like, if I have to change the way I throw, or if I'm not feeling 100% and now – like there's going to be knock-on effects. Like I could blow out my UCL.
Yeah.
Like I could have serious injuries to where it's like it's not possible for me to do this for 18 months.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to go with the football analogy, it's like maybe your knee issue gets worse. Maybe it's all the way towards now an ACL tear. But I mean, especially nowadays, like ACL, like you miss 8 months, 9 months, and you're kind of back on track.
You
back
feel
to
like the guy's going to be back after suffering an ACL injury. And I mean, ever since Adrian Peterson came back from it, I think we all believe that this is no longer that serious of an injury from a long-term perspective.
You also don't have a third of all football players with ACL injuries. You don't have a huge percentage of your sport.
35.7% of pitchers. I mean, wow.
That's nuts. You carry like 12 pitchers on a team?
So that means four...
four guys on every team.
Possibly five have had it. Or will get it.
Yeah, or will. I mean, that's what they all have to look around and be like, am I the one who gets... Am I next who gets it?
Seriously.
I mean, just think about Astros. Like, Verlander's gotten it. got it a few years ago. Like, there's so many guys that just off the top of your head, you're like, oh, yeah. Actually, there's less guys off the top of your head because so many guys get it that you're like, oh, yeah, he didn't pitch that year. Why was that?
And some of these guys have had it done multiple times.
I know. I mean, now it's all the way down to, like, college and high school kids get it.
Yeah.
I knew so when I was in high school that had Tommy John. A pitcher on our baseball team had Tommy John.
I will never forget this conversation that I had with a guy. This was in Disney World when I was like 8. A guy who was claiming to be, I believe, reliever Steve Trout. And maybe he was Steve Trout. I don't know. I remember I recognized the name because I was a huge nerd that read sports almanacs back in the day. And I remember he told me, do not throw a curveball until you're like 15. And then even then, you better be careful with it. And I mean, I agree with him, but it feels like the last 10 years in particular, something happened where we are now throwing our arms out of the socket that it connects to your shoulder. Is it Tim Lincecum? Is he the guy who started it all? Because I remember Lincecum was throwing with a ridiculous velocity and it is smaller than me.
Yeah, I don't know. Because it's not like guys pitch like him anymore. Or like it's not like there's a whole bunch of Lincecum clones out there.
Right.
But I think it's the same. What he was chasing is now what everyone chases. I think that's more – I don't know if it's mechanically the same, but it's what Tim Lincecum had to do to pitch as hard as he did at his size – is now you have guys that are big,
right?
Also trying to maximize their velocity at any given cost. And listen, like, I'm not a pitching coach, I'm not a doctor, but I can tell you, like, something happened. Maybe not in 2016, but we're feeling the effects of it now. Where the way that these guys are taught or coached how to throw a baseball, maybe not even at. I mean, I'm sure some of it's trickled down to, like, travel baseball because those parents are psychopaths with it. But, I think even in a major league system or in a minor league system, how they're like, no, this is how we want our pitchers to pitch. I think that is a reason why all these guys' elbows blow out now.
That's certainly a factor. Is there a way to prevent it? I don't even know.
Teach them a different way to pitch. But I think it's the way to – if one team is like, you know, our development key, instead of just throwing as hard as possible, what we're going to do is just have our best pitchers available all the time because they're not throwing their arms out of their sockets.
Big picture, I don't know what can be done to stop this. You know, much like big picture, I don't know what Tank Dell is supposed to do to stop the gun violence. Like
maybe that. Tank Dell can get on this one, too. When he's done with gun violence, he can get on Tommy John.
Probably easier to solve than gun violence, to be perfectly honest. We're referring to a question that was asked of Tank Dell, which is just insane. We might have to play this before the end of the show. But I do think if you're looking for someone to blame right now and get mad at, like, this is the most convenient one, Astros fans. Because for the most part, the other problems are all just you when you look in the mirror. Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Gallant and George. I'm getting a scam phone call. Should I pick up on the air? Should I pick up?
We got to go to break.
All right, we'll go to break. Coming up next, what could a Houston Rocket player learn from tonight's NBA Finals? One literally found out yesterday. Stick around. You want to jump in? Just me, no Joe, 713-780-3776 to call or to text on our YouTube at ESPN Houston, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Text was pointing out that I guess some catchers have had Tommy John surgery too. That's crazy.
Yeah, I know like Bryce Harper got it.
Shohei, but Shohei's also a pitcher.
Yeah. But yeah, there are other guys that get it. It's always weird because like Bryce Harper just came back after like maybe 9 months or something. It was like it's not because you can just Shohei can't pitch, but he can still swing a bat. He hit a home run off of Paul Skeens last night. So
correct.
It's like, you can still be a very good hitter and you don't need your UCL for some reason.
So Skeens struck out Ohtani once and Ohtani got a home run off of Skeens.
Yeah. Just like dead center too. It was you know, baseball still can deliver the big matchups every once in a while.
The problem is the people that are stewards of the game.
Yeah. They need baseball tonight. They still need baseball tonight.
You know what, Sean? No, they need to give me the bag, and I'll dive all the way into baseball. What? They need someone who is hilarious, super talented,
mm-hmm.
handsome. They need all of
young.
Those things. Young, yeah. I'm 35.
A young face.
Look, I'm younger than all that.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that they could get away. They could half their age. Some of them could half their age by getting a 35-year-old.
There's been few things more sobering to me, a 35-year-old, than we have a crop of interns. And one of our interns, Ryan, he's fun to talk with. But Ryan is very young and realizing that I am literally old enough to be his irresponsible father, like that kind of blows my mind. Also him saying like, hey, well, at least you're not 40 yet. Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that. That's going on your intern report. Ageism.
Pros and cons. Cons. Ageism.
One more text. What's crazy, watching these college pitchers throw on 1 and 2 days rest if they're throwing 100-plus pitches. After they just go out there, no problem. Why don't we see more Tommy John in the NCAA? Because these pitch counts are way higher. Well, I doubt many of them are throwing the filthy stuff that we're seeing at the major league level that involves the elbow torque and all those things that some of these guys that actually make it to the top are getting. Some of these guys are probably just fastballers. You know, straight fastballers, I would assume. Now, I'm sure they have some stuff that's different, but you could probably throw 150 just straight gas over and over and over again. It's
also a lot of these guys do get Tommy John. It's just when they go to the minor leagues. Exactly. Like they do eventually, it catches up.
They might
with
be
them.
Pitching through it, right.
Yeah.
Speaking of ageism, here's a moment where a Houston Rocket got some valuable insight. Jabari Smith Jr., young member of the Houston Rockets, showed up at a Jason Tatum pre-NBA Finals press conference, and he had this question for Jason Tatum.
What's up, bro? well, first of all, Jabari Smith, NBA correspondent. I feel like this league is a lot of expectation. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to try to shift it a little bit. What would you say to somebody going into their third year who hasn't really lived up to the expectation that has been set on him? What would you say to somebody going into that?
I would say that somebody that, you know, has been through that, right? How old are you?
21.
I've been in that situation. Everybody else in the world that's your age that's 21 is still probably in school trying to figure out what they want to do in life. And we come into the league at such a young age, and they want us to be perfect right away. And this is part of growing up. You're still growing up. I'm still growing up. And it's a process, right? Nothing was accomplished overnight. And I think you'll find the value in tough times, the ups and downs, just what life brings you. Damn, I sound like a real old person right now. just in the sense of like your career. I would just say, man, enjoy it. Everything will take care of itself how it's supposed to.
For sure. Appreciate you. Good luck to you.
Good luck to Jason Tatum. I agree. Hopefully Celtics in seven. We'll see.
Little biased by Jabari Smith as a member of the media. A little on the bias side.
Yeah, you can't do that at the end of the question. But look, I mean, the Rockets are the Celtics South is the hope. No game-changing, transcendent talent with any of your early draft picks to this point. You've had some moments with Jalen Green, but it was 1 month this past year. Just got to keep that in the back of your mind. Jabari Smith Jr. has had his moments as well, but I still think he is like literally growing as a human being. He's, after all, just said he's 21 years old there. And you got some other guys, too, and very curious to see how Amen Thompson progresses. Cam Whitmore, very excited about him. There's a lot of young players on this team, and you're hoping that as time goes on, that much like the Boston Celtics eventually turned into what they have been for the last 5 years or so, you're hoping that this core can do that too. I am intrigued, and not in a good way, by the way that Jabari asked that question, is Jabari someone who feels like he hasn't done enough? I mean, in a way, that's good. You want him to not be perhaps feeling himself to a degree that Jalen Green certainly felt himself over a month, and maybe comes back to reality and just realizing, oh, I still got to put in the work. But Sean, I heard that question. And I thought to myself, wait, is Jabari Smith Jr., like, does he need a confidence boost? Does he need someone to pat him on the back and say, hey, man, like, you're doing all right?
Yeah, that was my first thought, too, was like, aw, come on, Jabari. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't be that hard. But at a certain point, you do like that he's hard on himself. That is ultimately in the
right.
Ultimately a good thing. But yeah, because if he really goes, it's like, yeah, he hasn't really. I mean, he's been a solid. I mean, he just finished his second year in the NBA. This year, obviously, better than his first year. But you think about the situation he was in his first year. That was no one was going to succeed in that when he had Steven Silas, like, basically bragging that they never called plays for Jabari Smith. He was like, yeah, any shot he gets, it just kind of happens. So, yeah, I think he was solid this year. I think he was one of the guys, young guys, that kind of grew the most, I would say, from Ime Udoka taking over. But, yeah, I do like that at one point. One half, I'm like, come on, man, you're not a disappointment. I wouldn't go disappointment on it. But on the other hand, I like that he has that mindset.
It's a good mindset to have. And I don't know that he necessarily was being hard on himself in that question. But in the question, he did say, like, someone in their third year that hasn't necessarily lived up to the expectations. And I'm like, man, you're putting pretty high expectations on yourself. You're expecting to be Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown and what they eventually grew into. And by the way, like, both of those guys, it seems like they've been in the league for a very long time. Because get this, they have.
Well,
over half a decade.
What, 16 and 17 drafts?
Yeah.
And Jabari was 22. So, yeah, that there's like a four or five-year difference between them. So, like, there's that difference. And then there's also those guys. And it's honestly a little bit with Amen Thompson and Cam Whitmore, and if they draft at number three, who the guy that they draft this year is going to go through, is that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum both got drafted to pretty solid Celtics teams. Like, they got the third pick both those years, not because they were the third worst team in basketball. They're making the playoffs those years, or I think one year they missed the playoffs, but were pretty close. So they weren't these terrible teams like the Steven Silas Rockets were, where Jabari Smith walked into a situation on a team worse than any team that Jason Tatum has ever been on. The Jason Tatum's Duke team might have been better than the teams that were getting rolled out the last few years. So there is a little bit of a situation where those guys get a better kind of runway to success in the NBA because they get to start off as role players and grow their game more naturally as opposed to getting thrown in the deep end, which everyone wants these guys to just get thrown in the deep end. It's like, that's actually not really, I get the want for that, but that's not necessarily the best thing for all these guys. I'm sure if you asked Tatum and Brown, it was a good thing that they not just had, you know, Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving and prime Al Horford on their team when they started, not just as, well, our team was better then, but it's also good as, well, I had to find my role in the NBA and grow my game in a more natural way instead of just trying, you know, like Kevin Porter and Jalen Green, trying to be James Harden clones in their first 2 years in the league where you're not ready for that. James Harden wasn't ready for it. James Harden didn't have that kind of responsibility when he got drafted.
That's true. To be fair to James Harden, he never Kevin Porter Jr.'d himself. So, yeah.
No, I'm saying.
But I get what you're saying. On the
James,
court.
Yeah, James Harden was better than those guys. Yes. Those guys tried to do James Harden stuff and they couldn't do it. But at the same time, James Harden wasn't asked to do that from day one like these guys are. And I think that's ultimately a bad thing.
AAU is so bad for these kids. I think everyone is of the belief that they're going to be like the greatest player ever. And I feel like it just gives these guys delusions that are hard to overcome. And maybe that lends itself back to what we were talking about with Jabari Smith, thinking maybe he hasn't lived up to expectations.
Yeah.
He's Sean Mapes. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe's going to be back on Monday. Coming up next, are you buying what C.J. Stroud is saying about your beloved Houston Texans. Plus, he has a favorite new word, and I feel like every single time we hear it this year, we're going to have to do something. What is that? You'll hear. Stick around. We heard from C.J. Stroud at Texans minicamp on, I believe, Tuesday. Didn't have a chance to react to it yesterday. So, Stephon Diggs is the newest member of this Texans team, easily the highest profile new Houston Texan. And here's what C.J. Stroud had to say about what he's been like since he joined the team.
You know, so he's come in and been a leader, which I'm proud of him for. And, you know, just really has been unselfish and wanted to see other guys eat. And that was his main thing, is like he wanted to be around other dogs. And, you know, he stepped into that role where there's a dog everywhere. He looks right, he looks left, there's going to be a dog. So and he wanted that, and that's what, you know, we bring to the table. And he's been nothing but just amazing so far. And I'm very excited to work with him.
C.J. Stroud loves to let the word dog out of his mouth.
I like calling people dogs, but...
We got some hungry dogs.
Yeah. You look to the left, you look to the right, dogs everywhere.
Dogs.
It's 101 Dalmatians.
Go back to last year. He said that word a lot. This year, he is still saying it a lot. I like it.
I use it less than C.J. Stroud uses it, but I'll use it every once in a while. Sometimes that's the best way to describe someone. Like, what does he play like? Well, he's a dog. I don't know if everyone needs to be a dog, though.
No. I mean, the real dogs, the devil dogs, Marines in World War I.
Oh.
Real dogs, guys who stormed Normandy, shout out, D-Day, 80 years ago. Isn't that insane?
Talk about looking to your right, look to your left. Nothing but dogs. Yeah.
Nothing's more annoying than a yappy dog.
Yeah. I hope when he says dog, I'm thinking like labs and above as far as like size and intimidation.
Everyone thinks I'm just a cat guy. No, I do love dogs. Labs are friendly though. Golden Retrievers, generally friendly, though. Growing up, the reason I didn't love dogs as a kid was because we had a psycho terrorist Golden Retriever named Goldie next door that would run through the electric fence into our yard. And one time I was playing a game that now would be considered problematic, Cowboys and Indians wearing a bandana. And Goldie, the dog, saw that and cancel cultured me, came straight for the neck, ripped the bandana off, and tore it to shreds right in front of me. Little 6-year-old Polly.
What color was the bandana?
Blue and white.
Maybe Goldie was a blood?
Yeah, I think so. Makes sense.
I was really hoping you'd say either red or blue. You could not imagine how much I was like, please say red or blue.
I wasn't wearing it like the Crips or Bloods wear it. I was wearing it, the thing you put over your mouth.
Goldie's just doing her best.
If you're robbing a bank. Yeah, yeah. Well, no. I do not hope that dog is... I hope that dog's in dog hell.
All dogs go to heaven.
Except for Goldie.
You not see the movie?
Goldie the Golden Retriever. Little terrorist.
Just
but,
alone in hell? In dog hell?
Yeah.
Looking to its left?
Dog
looking
hell.
To his right? No dog?
Looking for other children to assault. But I like Golden Retrievers. I like Labs. Yeah. Like, north of that...
I don't want him to be scary. I don't want him to be like, yeah, he's a beagle. I'm like, I want a little bit more than beagle.
I mean, beagles are at least cute.
Yeah, I don't want cute football players though. You know what? Only Tank Dell. Tank Dell can be the small dog. I need Rottweilers. I need Dobermans. I need German Shepherds. Although problematic on D-Day.
That is problematic on D-Day. Yeah, these are all assault dogs.
Football's a violent sport. I need violent dogs.
I'm looking up the dogs you protect from wolves in Russia.
Those like huge ones?
I think so. Caucasian Shepherd dog. Yeah, those things, speaking of Tank Dell, they look like tanks. There's the Akbash. There's the Commodore. There's the Great Pyrenees. Great Pyrenees are beautiful dogs. I love those dogs. Tibetan Mastiff. These are the kind of dogs that C.J. Stroud wants on the Houston Texans. No chihuahuas.
No.
So yappy.
No.
Always a bad attitude. Like, chihuahuas, like, listen.
Ever meet a chill chihuahua?
No.
Like, one that, like, wow, what a chill dog.
No. They're lucky they made it. Supposedly, those were the pets of the Aztecs back in the day. And I'm really curious as to how those dogs became so small. Because supposedly, the Aztecs were terrified more of these dogs that the Spaniards brought with them, who had armor on and were huge, than they were of, like, the Spanish with their guns and the disease and such. Like, the dogs were terrified.
If you go from chihuahua to dogs of war, I can see why you're just like, whoa, what are these?
What?
The people, I can deal with the people. And the guns, I get it. They're like bows and arrows, but more aggressive. What the hell are we doing with these dogs?
Look up online. Like, imagine a dog wearing armor. They were called becerrillo, which means little bull calf. That's what the Castilian attack dog was called during the time of the Spanish conquistadors. And yeah, they had armor. They're pretty ugly dogs, these things. Pretty gross. Look bulldoggy. But hey, scary dogs. Anyway, do you want to continue to talk about dogs? C.J. Stroud also talked about the leadership and his development on that front that he's bringing to the table now going into his second season in the NFL.
You know, I'm the captain of the ship, and I got to run it the right way, and I feel like I've, you know, stepped into that role of just, you know, not only holding guys accountable, but also, you know, holding myself accountable to those moments. Like, I don't let anything slide because that's the point of winning and losing, so... I think from last year to this year, like, I've gotten a lot better with, like, controlling my emotions, controlling my ball placement, knowing what's NFL open, knowing my footwork better. Just really every little thing, I've taken a step. And then on the other side of the ball, you know, just everything slowed down, seeing coverage.
It is important for him to take steps forward. I am curious as to what those steps are. Highlighted from minicamp this week, a moment where C.J. Stroud talked to the offense on a day where they weren't doing so well. I believe that was Tuesday, and called them out. DeMeco liked seeing that. I like hearing that he did that. But you're expecting that out of him. If he's the starting quarterback year one, you know, that's something that you're hoping he did year one. It's interesting that Trevor Lawrence, from the sound of things, hasn't quite been that guy his first couple of years in the NFL. That's at least an offseason story that we've heard via Doug Peterson. But nice to hear that from Stroud on the leadership perspective. I'm the captain of the ship. You don't need a permit to drive a boat in Texas, do you? I know in Florida you kind of do. In Washington you do. I have a Washington boater's license, for those who care. Took lessons. Was thinking so much. The Washington State Boater Education Card. You know? It's key. I don't know when it expires. And also, the only time I've driven a boat, I should not have been allowed to do it. We were renting from some guy in Seattle. I really had no idea what I was doing with it.
I think you need a license. I think it's like certain types of boats, though.
I don't know, man. I think if you get your driver's license in Texas, I think you're able to drive. In Florida, that's the case too. Florida, like, you just need an actual driver's license, and you can also drive a boat.
Okay.
We're different here.
I'm looking at boater education from the Texas wildlife thing, like outdoors and wildlife.
It would be key, honestly, probably for the best to have people, I don't know, take lessons.
Anyone born on or after September 1st, 1993, who wishes to operate certain vessels on public waterways in the state of Texas needs a boater education certificate.
Damn. Do I need it? Does it have to be a Texas one?
Well,
damn, I don't want to have to retake that course.
It's people born after 1993.
Oh!
You're good.
Let's go! So there you go. He's Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes, he can't drive a boat without a license.
What a win for the 30-year-olds.
I can. It is a huge win for the 30-year-olds. Shut up! I'm in midlife crisis mode. That's the next phase. Boat Paul. Up next, garbage time and a team is impersonating the Dallas Cowboys right now. It's not about you. Stick around.
You're back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
Last chance today is Gallant and George. No Joe. He'll be back on Monday. It's going to be Sean and me tomorrow. Fun times. All right, guys. A text in response to our segment where we talked about things CJ Stroud has said. He loves the word dog. He says it a lot. A text asks the question, does CJ say dog because Snoop Dogg was his coach? I'm just asking the question. It's a good question to ask.
I think that I don't know if it's a conscious choice that he's making every time, but subconsciously, maybe.
In the commercial break, you suggested that maybe he says the word dog instead of MF-er.
Yeah,
I like
it's just,
that.
It's just a way to clean it up to where it's like, oh, he's a bad MF-er. And it's like, well,
still,
I can't say that. I'm a good guy. Good guy of the year, some would say. Thank you, DJ.
Man of God.
He is a man of God. And so maybe he's like, you know what? I'll just call people dogs because that's more, friendly for all ages.
I like it. I like
it. I like it.
I told Donald Trump to chill dog once, and I
where'd that lead you?
Led me to Tucker Carlson's show. Getting
hey, we got a show open out of it.
That's true.
That's true. Who cares? It was tough for you. We got a show open out of it. We got some bits out of it.
I got death threats. Come on, Sean.
You're still alive?
I know that's
a lot of tough talk.
Internet death threats are like so 2020. You're not going outside. Come on. All right. Let's start garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
I'm curious if this story is just trash. So, after hearing through Shams Charania that J.J. Redick was the frontrunner to be the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, Adrian Wojnarowski reported that the Lakers are targeting UConn men's basketball coach Dan Hurley as their next coach and are preparing a massive long-term deal to bring him to the NBA. Woj is reporting it, but this is a weird report. The Lakers are targeting somebody? Because that doesn't mean that there's mutual interest. And to me, this reeks of the Lakers not in the playoffs this year. Looking at the Boston Celtics, potentially about to pass them again for most titles, even though the Lakers only have 12 titles because 5 of them they won in Minnesota. I'm curious to know if we gave them truth serum, if they're just putting this out there so that they can have some attention about them in the same way LeBron was clamoring for attention, talking about how he wishes he still played with Kyrie Irving. I'm wondering if the Lakers are just trying to put themselves back out there. I say this because Dan Hurley multiple times has said that he defers to his wife when it comes to where he will coach and that she doesn't want to leave the Northeast. I suppose that maybe California, Los Angeles would be different. Honestly, if I were in her shoes, I would make it different. But this story, even if it is coming from Woj, Sean, I'm looking at it with a bit of a side eye because I think the Lakers feel left out that they're not only not in the playoffs, but that the Celtics might win another title and have the most in NBA history.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know as much because I'm not a Laker or Celtics fan. So to me, in my brain, like that rivalry, it's like, you know, that was like a 1980s thing. Like, I don't still think of it as a rivalry, like day to day. And so that could be a good point. I would say if this was going to be just like the, like as cynical as it is, I think they would have done it before today. Because today is like, if you're just Woj or the Lakers wanting to dominate ESPN talking points, you could have done this. basically after the Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, Kennedy Carter thing died out, you know, Tuesday afternoon, throw this tweet out there, and now you're on for, you know, the next 2 days before the finals start, as opposed to the morning of the finals. It's a little...
That's why it's fishy to me.
It's weird to... But I would say if you're going to step on it, you'd step on the entire lead up.
No, I think it's the day of. Because guess what? Now, like, halftime, I guarantee you there's a Lakers segment.
Well, halftime, that's like 1 minute anyway.
And I bet they'll
between commercials.
But will Bob Myers talk about the Lakers when asked about what's going on between the Celtics and the Dallas Mavericks?
I would love that, actually.
I would laugh, actually, too.
Celtics up 12 at halftime. So it's like a lot. Yeah. It's a lot, but not a blowout.
That would be pretty funny.
And they're just like, I don't know. It whatever. Mike Wilbon, I don't care.
Big thanks to Sean Mavis behind the glass. He's going to be sitting next to me tomorrow. I am merely Paul Gallant. So long. Farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful Thursday. The Killer Bees are up next. Peace.